The fifth case, Cubtus versus the City of Greenwood. Ms. DeBroda.
May it please the court, my name is Amy DeBroda. I represent Ronald Cubtus in this matter. This case is an ADA case that's on appeal from a grant of summary judgment by the trial court. There are two issues before the court today. The first is, are the essential functions of a job defined by the uninformed opinions of management or by the way the job is actually performed? This court should overturn the trial court's grant of summary judgment because the trial court improperly weighed the evidence on this issue. The second issue is, did Cubtus present evidence from which a jury could conclude the city regarded him as disqualified from a broad range or class of jobs and therefore regarded him as disabled? This court should affirm the trial court on this point because Cubtus presents evidence that the city had a 100% healed policy and additional evidence that the city believed him to be excluded from a broad class of jobs. Mr. Cubtus was a model employee during his 9 years with the city's street department. After a back injury and subsequent surgery, his doctor imposed restrictions. They were no continuous raking for more than 2 hours and no more than 4 total hours raking in 1 day. Now, these restrictions were only relevant for about 4 to 6 weeks a year during leaf season. Nevertheless, the city focused only on the restrictions and not on Mr. Cubtus' ability to do the job, and they fired him. Due to the nature of Cubtus' restrictions, the question is not whether raking is an essential function of the job, but how much raking is essential. And the job description is silent on this point. In order for Mr. Cubtus' restrictions to even be an issue, 4 things had to happen during leaf season. First, Mr. Cubtus had to be assigned to a leaf crew, and not everyone was. Second, every house on the route that the crew took would have to fail to rake the leaves close enough to the curb, because that was the only situation in which a raker had to rake. Next, the crew would have to fail to rotate positions during the day. It's undisputed that there was a mandate from management to rotate from day to day, and Cubtus presented evidence that he was and the crews were given discretion to rotate jobs during the day. And this was actually later mandated by the supervisor. The last thing that would have to happen is that the laborers would have to work overtime. The job description says that overtime is occasional. The city superintendent, Owens, gave opinions about what could happen, but they were all based on a 10-hour day. The city did not establish that overtime is an essential job function as a matter of law. The problem here is that the district court weighed Mr. Cubtus' testimony and found it self-serving and drew negative inferences from the evidence offered by his coworkers when positive inferences in favor of Mr. Cubtus' were also available. The court weighed the evidence offered by Cubtus about how the job was actually done, and it weighed it against the superintendent's opinion about
Counsel,
what...
My sticking point on this case is that I don't see how a belief that your client can't rake leaves for more than 4 hours a day equals a belief that he is unable to perform some major life activity. Except in some very odd cultures, raking leaves more than 4 hours a day would not be viewed as a major life activity.
Well, Your Honor, the major life activity that's at issue in this case is the major life activity of working. And
not only has the Supreme Court reserved the question whether that is a major life activity, it made it clear in Toyota that the inability to do a particular job is not a major life activity.
Well, Your Honor,
this looks very much like the kind of claim that was rejected in Toyota.
Your Honor, it's our contention that the standard set by the Supreme Court in Toyota versus Williams is not the proper standard that should be applied here. Rather, it's the standard of whether or not the employee is perceived as excluded from a broad range or class of jobs. And actually, this court has implicitly rejected.
But it's your, by your own definition, the range of jobs in which one has to rake leaves more than 4 hours a day is negligible, and you say it doesn't even include a job that has a duty to rake leaves. So one would think this is not a broad class of jobs by your own theory.
Well, Your Honor, the important piece of evidence on that point is the fact that the HR director for the city, Carolyn Gayer, told Mr. Cupstis that she searched every department in the city for a job that he could do and was unable to find one. That presents evidence that the city believed that he was excluded from a broad range or class of jobs.
That's pretty much treating the ADA as an unemployment program. You would say it's evidence of disability that there are no open jobs.
No, there's actually a material issue of fact on that point, Your Honor. Ms. Gayer testified that she found no jobs open. Mr. Cupstis testified that she told him at the time that she did not find any jobs which he could do. Therefore, that material issue of fact is very important in this case, and that should create a material issue of fact which would prevent the court from entering summary judgment. Mr. Owens testified about his opinion about how the crew should be doing his job, and it was littered with words like hope and intention and expect. And he, in the end, he said, I quote, I don't know. You know, I mean, you can't be out there all day watching each particular crew, end quote. And when asked if the job involved 4 hours a day of raking, he said, quote, it's possible it could. I mean, typically it doesn't, but it could. In the end, Mr. Cupstis did know because he was out there every day on the crew. And he gave factual testimony, which the district court described as self-serving, and gave credence to the pure opinions by the superintendent, who had only been out with the leaf crew one time. And he admitted that he didn't know how they operated during the day. The district court's use of the term self-serving to characterize Mr. Cupstis's affidavit ignores this court's finding in Payne versus Polly, where the court found that an affidavit could indeed stave off summary judgment, and that the use of the term self-serving indicated that the court was weighing the credibility of the evidence and that that was not permissible. The conflict in the testimony creates a material issue of fact that a jury should get to decide based on the credibility and knowledgeability of the witnesses. The city's lack of effort to determine the real requirements of the laborer job and Cupstis's ability to do the job, combined with the evidence that Cupstis presents that he could in fact do the job within his restrictions and that the city fired him 2 months before leaf season even began, provides enough circumstantial evidence that is probative of intentional discrimination, requiring an assessment by a jury under the Supreme Court's case of Reeves versus Sanderson Plumbing. Cupstis asked this court to overturn the district court's grant of summary judgment and allow a jury to make the decision. To do otherwise would nullify the ADA by allowing employers to define the essential functions of the job and an employee's abilities without any basis in reality.
Thank you, Mr. Boris. Mr. Semler?
May it please the court, my name is Ron Semler. I'm here on behalf of the city of Greenwood. As the court is aware, this is a case where Mr. Cupstis believes that the city of Greenwood violated the ADA in his termination from the position of truck driver laborer with the Greenwood Street Department. The parties agree that Mr. Cupstis did not, in fact, have a disability as defined by statute. The issue is whether or not the city regarded him as being disabled. The basic question that he has presented is that he presented evidence that the city believed that he had an impairment which would limit his ability to provide a class or a broad range of jobs. Again, the restriction at issue here is very job-specific, very limited. Mr. Cupstis received restrictions from his doctor indicating that he could not lift anything over 60 pounds, could not rake continuously for 2 hours, could not rake more than 4 hours a day. Again, that is very, very specific to the job of truck driver laborer with the city of Greenwood. The district court found that the Mr. Cupps has presented evidence to from which a jury could believe that the city regarded him as disabled, and then went on to find that Mr. Cupps was not a qualified individual with a disability under the statute. We believe that the court erred in its determination of the threshold question as to whether or not Mr. Cupps was regarded as having a disability under the statute. The court's rationale seems to be based upon a combination of the human resources director looking for a job for Mr. Cupps in city government after it was determined that he could not.
So my principal question for you is why you paid any attention to his doctor. You had your own physician examine him. Your physician concluded essentially that his doctor was being, shall we say, unduly conservative, if not hallucinating. Why didn't the city just put him back to work?
Well, I believe that the city would probably take the position that it is entitled to rely upon the prohibitions imposed by the family's doctors.
Your brief is full of language like that. Doctors don't prohibit anything. They write letters or reports saying, here's my medical view. The only entity that did any prohibiting was your client, who fired the plaintiff.
That's correct, Your Honor. I suppose the position of any governmental entity is that once you are put on notice that medical evidence is to the effect.
So no governmental entity ever disagrees with the position of any one of America's 2 million physicians?
I think they do it on a regular basis, Your Honor.
Of course they do. They do it all the time.
But as an employer, you're putting yourself at risk if something happens.
And guess what? You're at risk if you honor a silly opinion and fire the man, as you now discover.
Yes, we are discovering that we are at risk for that. On the merits, though, Your Honor, we believe that the city was entitled to rely upon the prohibitions of the physician that examined Mr. Cupps. We had the ability to ignore that, and I think we did so. If we had done so, we would have done so at our own peril, had anything untoward happened to Mr. Cupps as a result.
Did you ask him for an indemnity?
I do not believe we did, Your Honor.
It might be a perfectly feasible thing for the city to do, to say, look, our physician thinks you can do this. Your physician is, we believe, being unduly conservative. If you want to waive any damages recovery based on your physician, we'll take you. But if you're going to hold us up for damages in the event your physician is correct, we won't.
I believe that might have been a rational response.
Of course, it might have been, in the language of the ADA, it might have been a suitable accommodation.
It might have, and an admission that we regarded him as disabled.
No. This circuit is very clear that making accommodations does not concede that somebody is regarded as disabled, and most recently Sagan against the Board of Education.
I'm familiar with the case, Your Honor. The 100% rule that the district court relied upon, as the court is aware, used to be a practice of some companies that when an employee got injured, they could not return to work until they were 100% over the injury. And the courts that have addressed this issue have held that this is a violation of the ADA because it kind of is a blanket prohibition against people returning to work that are injured without an individual assessment of whether or not they can perform the functions of the job. There is certainly nothing in this case that would indicate in the least that the city of Greenwood had anything close to 100% healed rule. Mr. Cupps had several instances where he either was injured himself or had surgery each time he was brought back to work on light duty. In fact, he worked right up until the time he was terminated. Further, in this case, there was an individual assessment of his abilities to perform the function of the job. Several meetings between the head of the department, the human resources personnel, a couple of trips to doctors, there was an assessment as to whether or not he could perform the functions of the position. Thirdly, the purpose of this assessment was actually whether it needed to be or not accomplished in this case, in that inquiries were made of Mr. Custis as to whether or not he had any ideas of any accommodations that the people could make to help him perform the job. Consequently, we think that there's just nothing here that would indicate that there was a 100% HEAL rule utilized by the city of Greenwood. The court also combined this supposed or alleged 100% HEAL rule with the fact that the human resources director looked at the positions for the city of Greenwood and was not able to find a position for Mr. Custis. There is a dispute as far as she says she said that there was nothing open. Mr. Custis said that there was nothing he could do, is what she had said. In her reply brief, or in his reply brief, Mr. Custis indicates that there's some inference of bad faith or something to be found in the part of the dismissal letter that invited him to apply for jobs when the human resource director knew there were no openings. As the court is aware, there may not be any openings today. There may be openings tomorrow, next week, or next month, and they invited him to apply for those openings. There's just nothing that would indicate that the human resources director, by looking around for a job and not being able to find one for him, had the position that he was disqualified from a broad range of jobs. Yet the court combined this 100% HEAL rule and the fact that the human resources director could not find him a job in the government to come to the conclusion that the city required or regarded him as being disqualified from a broad range of jobs. As the court previously pointed out, the only restriction at issue here is the inability to work to rake leaves more than 4 hours a day. That does not disqualify anyone from most jobs that anyone can think of, with the exception of this one job at issue here. Apparently, the court below assumed or inferred from the fact that the human resources director could not find him a job with any other government entity that every governmental entity for the town of Greenwood required people to rake for 4 hours a day. That is not the case. It's not a reasonable expectation or a reasonable inference. I see my time is up. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Semler.
I'll focus on the second issue, which is whether or not the city regarded Mr. Custis as disabled. And there's two things that go to that question. The first is that Mr. Custis presented evidence of the 100% healed policy, and the second is that the evidence that he provided regarding the city's view that he was disqualified from a broad range or class of jobs. The evidence that he provided as to 100% healed policy was that Mr. Owens said that he fired Custis based on the fact that he had restrictions. Repeatedly stated that he focused on the restrictions, not on what Mr. Custis was able to do. He didn't ask Mr. Custis if he could do the job. He didn't talk to Mr. Custis's doctor, and he ignored the opinion of the city doctor.
Didn't Mr. Custis, following surgery, return to work on light duty with the city of Greenwood?
That's true, Your Honor. He did.
Isn't that evidence that they didn't have a 100% heel rule?
Your Honor, Mr. Cupstis was the first employee to present permanent restrictions, and that's the distinction between before he had just short-term restrictions, and this he was the first one to ever present permanent restrictions, and so I think that's the most important distinction on that point. I see my time is up.
No, you have until the red light comes on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
But you're not legally obliged.
And you are close.
Well, I might as well stop then.
No, don't. If you have a summary thought, you certainly may finish it.
Well, Your Honor, I just think it's very important that the combination of the 100% healed policy and the dispute about Ms. Geyer and her search for jobs are extremely important. There was also additional evidence that was presented to the trial court, which the trial court chose to exclude, which I think shouldn't have been, but that was even additional evidence of the fact that the city regarded him as disabled.
Was there any evidence in the record how the raking speaks to the lifting or the 40-pound restriction?
There is some evidence on that, Your Honor.
And I can understand it's the shoveling, but I guess maybe my limited shoveling and raking experience is not informing me well enough on this. But I have a little difficulty how the raking gets to the 40-pound thing, unless it's lifting containers with leaves or something.
Well, Your Honor, are you referring to evidence from the city's standpoint and how they viewed that restriction
or from the
doctor's standpoint?
Anything that the record is.
Okay. Well, Your Honor, Superintendent Owens stated that originally, with the original restriction of 40 pounds, he was concerned about that. And then Mr. Cupstis returned to his doctor, and his doctor raised it to the higher amount of 50 pounds, I believe it was. And then Superintendent Owens stated that at that point he wasn't worried about the lifting restriction anymore, and that his only concern was the raking and as that affected leaf season.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will